Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you back to my home. I'm welcoming myself back to my home, actually. Me and Odin flew in to Colorado Springs Airport last night at around midnight. So we got home around like 1-ish, and I had to get settled. We're back. It's nice. I had a really nice trip. Probably going to use it as my source material for the rest of our talk this morning, or may not. I do this show very laissez-faire, and most of the time I have very little planning or any sort of material that I'm going off of. I try to talk as loosely as possible, to be honest, and maybe sometimes that may come to bite me in the ass with my overabundance of mixed metaphor and just vagueness, because honestly, I don't really even know what I'm trying to talk about. A lot of the things that I find important are hard to put in words, which is a sentiment that I feel that others may share. But my purpose here on the Gingerbread Man is to spread curiosity and love. I'd say those are the two hands that I have been dealt and that I want to pervasively push. And I do think that these are viral systems, curiosity and love. I feel that curiosity comes from sheer interest. And to have interest, there is the necessities of having focus and attention, which might be in short supply with a lot of our days. I don't always have my full abundant attention. I try to give humans and life my full abundant attention, but there is a difference in how I can focus and dedicate myself with mornings and evenings, and even a weekend or a workday. So, not to digress too far, but I believe that when we can nurture a species of attention in ourselves where we want a little bit to build our own scheme of understanding for the world, and that isn't given to you and it isn't taught, there's no system of discipline that teaches that. Having maybe curiosity and love are attached in this way, because in order to be very curious, you have to love what you're looking at. A scientist who performs a hypothesis, I feel, rarely hypothesizes against what his or her belief is for the end result. And I don't think that scientists speak about this a lot. But if I'm doing a test, my gut has to tell me what I think is going to happen. And that's where my judgment comes in for my hypotheticals in the first place, correct? So, I think loving our world and our space in it makes us want to know more about it. At least that is what motivates me to want to be so curious, is because I love the things that I'm looking into. I adore our species. I adore our species philosophy and all of its hundreds of faces that are found all around the world. You see, when I pick up something that I'm interested in, that I'm curious in, it's because I love it. And when I share it, it's because the feeling that it gave me when I found that spark of maybe novelty or connection, that spark felt wonderful. Spreading curiosity, and what I feel that most good teachers want to do when they're teaching, which is spreading that aha moment, that light bulb, giving that to somebody so that they can take it and run with it. Because once the light is lit atop your head, you can travel and you can see by it, and you can find more things for yourself. You don't need any teacher. Lao Tzu said that you can know the whole universe without ever leaving your house. And you can know the Tao and you can live within the Tao without ever seeking anything. You see, what I'm trying to do here on this show is make a moment and provide a space. And I have my email address very available, so you or anybody you know who may disagree with me, I entirely would like to hear your disagreements. So please, let us have a discourse. This is what I hope will become a community of curiosity. And within community, there is an open-minded and open-hearted understanding of others, or at least an attempt for it. So we're not mind readers, but we can still be empathetic. Well, anyways, I've gone up and along long enough on whatever this intro was. So we went to Arizona for a wedding, which was highly particular for me. I'm very anti-traditional. I call myself anti-capitalist. I'm anti-government. I was anti a lot more things when I was younger, because while trying to seek individuality, I pushed everything away. Because if it was coming from the outside, then it wasn't me in my weird way of building my self in my childhood. I don't know if that makes any sense. So if everybody was listening to it, I didn't want to listen to it. You know, I don't watch movie ads. I don't do pop culture. I'm so, like, some of my friends like to call me grandpa because I haven't got on Instagram. I haven't got on social media. I don't do emojis. I don't do lingo speak. I speak like a book more often than I speak like any of my peers. And that's highly strange and awkward. And my point being is that this whole time when I was trying to build something, I pushed everything away. But the action of pushing everything away is conforming to an ideal, the conforming to anti-being, anti-tradition, anti-society, anti-other, you see? So within that, I found myself heavily entrenched in atheism and scientism and fundamental reductionism, when we're taking things down to material so that we can explain them in words. That was my bread and butter and my gospel from the time I was born, practically. I remember worshiping words to the beginning of my existence and feeling that if I could crunch enough words and read enough encyclopedias, that I could become some sort of ethereal being that was above a human, as absurd as that sounds, you know? But within this reductionism is, even though it's using the words of others, it's trying to know more of the words of others than others, you know? And that was all determined to try to build this sense of self and identity. Yet, I hope you could tell how sarcastic I'm speaking about it and how sarcastic I'm looking at my younger self. Because now I could see how being, I'm not using the right word, radical, you know, that's not the right word either, but just being countercultural, you know, against the flow, you know. I'm still so unlike anybody else that I know, at least from my own little bubble perspective. Yet nowadays, I don't run away from what other people are doing either. For instance, while we were out in Arizona, we went on a fishing trip. And I'm not big on water. And it's mainly just because I felt self-conscious about being in swim trunks when I was younger because I was overweight. And now, like, it's mainly just because everybody liked to go do it. And so I never wanted to go do it And I thought it's because I didn't want to, like, I didn't like doing these things, like getting wet, going swimming, going fishing, insert here, whatever outdoor activity that I've been avoiding for the past 10 years of my life, you know. But I told everybody, had, you know, like this little argument with one of my little tit for tat, one of my friends, where, you know, he was trying to be like, you should have brought some trunks, should have at least attempted to try. And I was like, well, I know what I like to do. I know what I want to do. I'm just going to read by the shore. You know, but when I actually got there, a quieter inner voice inside me looked around, and I instead asked myself what the best thing I could be doing in that moment was. And that sort of question can't be pre-decided, because you don't know what you're going to be doing in that moment. And so when I got there, I decided to kick my shoes off, and I rolled up my pants, and I walked into the water, which is really weird for me, you know, because back in my childish mind, which is still very much existent, trust me, my child mind is very much has a large home in my head. But my child mind would have been so stubborn, especially after the arguments, to not allow myself to conform to what everybody else was doing. You know, it's just this weird head trip that I'd found myself in, where I thought I was bettering myself, but all I was really doing was putting myself in this very small cage. We are social creatures. Conforming can be lovely sometimes. And I'm not talking to Holocaust victims and conforming to atrocities, and I'm still heavily anti-government. I don't see a big place for big government. But simply allowing yourself to go along with what other people are doing, even if you don't think it would be comfortable, sometimes you might surprise yourself, right? My point is the wedding itself. I have always been so, especially my anti-Christian rhetoric that I used my science as a weaponized action against, and I had heavily attached the wedding principle to Christianity and to the government and the laws behind it that bind people, and then you get all the tax breaks. And all of my reductioned mind couldn't see past it to see the ceremony that it is. A union between two people who have decided to take on not only the rest of their lives, but this ceremony, the wedding itself, is an example of how much they're willing to put through. It is so much fucking work, man. Like, so much effort that these two, this man and woman, have been committing themselves to for the groundworks and the foundations for the rest of their lives. You know, so much effort it took to get there. And I could just see it when I got there, because the groom picked me up from the airport and he was just exhausted and beat. And they had had a lot of fun going up to this and a lot of bachelor shit, you know, but still, I could tell that a lot of the fear, not quite fear, but the exhaustion just came from the past time. I could just see the time accumulated on my friend's shoulders. I could see it, you know, like baggage. And I knew, because I hadn't been around him for a while, how much he'd been carrying. And I didn't get to see the bride much, even though she's one of my best friends, because she was just running ragged the whole time. Just busting ass, getting people together here and there. You know, there was so much family that had flown in and trying to wrangle all these people. You know, I was not as prepared because of how much they were already doing. You know, me and the other guys, the other groomsmen, were hanging out. I didn't get to see them as much as I would like to, and I'm going to go back and see them more. But I understood, because they literally did not have the time, you know. But it's hard when you go out on a vacation and a trip and every single meal has to be bought. And you don't have, like, we had 8 guys and 2 cars. And that's really hard to get places. And I'm not the kind of person to fight for myself, unfortunately, or to push for things. And so you know, I'm not pushy to get to a store when everybody needs to get places. You know, I think the only thing I asked for was go to one dispensary. And, you know, it's a lot of money when you're buying every single meal. And you got to get extra clothes that you fucked up and swim trunks. But, yeah, vacation's heavy. And I was just a guest. You know, those beautiful, strong people willing to bring us all together for them and to do it. The ceremony itself is an example. It is a potent example, you know. And there's other societies that have other different ritualized processes for unions. Like Indian weddings are mega huge. Indian weddings are thousands and thousands of dollars and more probably. And I'm speaking out of my ass because I have no experience and I've never been. I've just seen some excerpts on some documentaries. So take this with a grain of salt from the white guy in America. But, you know, like huge weddings. But it's an example because it shows to the world. And when you're there and you have attachments to what's going on, like even as a guest, I felt the potency of that situation. And it was completely gorgeous. When they walked, we were in a beautiful Arizona park with a mountain right behind. And these mountains are different than the mountains of my home state of Colorado. But gorgeous. Red rocks with white stripings and white outcroppings and just a very vegetative environment with trees that I have never seen before. I've never spent a lot of time in Arizona, and I felt like I was in an alien country, and it was only an hour and a half flight away from my state, which is crazy. But I was blown away by the cactuses, these saguaro cactuses that are like 20 fucking feet tall and like as big around that you could barely probably hug them in some situations. And my buddy was telling me about how these cactuses, like the first initial stalk could take like 100 years to grow. So when they have like 8 or 9 arms sticking out and they're huge, that's like hundreds of year old cactuses, you know? And as we're driving by, I'm looking in the yards just of all these beautiful homes that are very colorful, like yellows and pinks and adobe and different architecture that I'm not used to seeing in Colorado. And those cactuses, like, you know, he tells me these are hundreds of years old, and then you see that people have them in their yards, and it's incredibly prescient that these creatures have been saved. You know, so just imagine this weddingscape, and it's a little auditorium approximately 30 feet in diameter with about 5 steps, like pretty small. And then behind it is this mountainous scene with the red rocks and the beautiful sand and the big ass cactus, you know. It was fucking beautiful. And my sister, the bride, she had us all decked out in purple suits. And my buddy had a yellow suit. It was like real all sparkly, like the main guy. And it was pretty cool. And I didn't expect how emotional it was going to be. And just because of my resistance and because of my damn stubborn, self-driven, self-concept, averted way to approaching life, I had no idea how emotional it was going to be. And as soon as I saw them walking down, man, my buddy was just leaky as soon as he got there. As soon as he started walking down the stairs, he got leaky. And yeah, as soon as I started seeing him cry, as soon as I started seeing her cry, I just started leaking. And I cried the entire time. You know, I remember when I was a kid, one of the movies that seriously fucked me up for some reason, because even then I was against it, was The Passion of the Christ. But when they put the dude, white Jesus, up on the crucifix, you know, I just got this rock in my throat. And I haven't had that in years, if not over a decade, that I felt that rock where it's like right underneath your voice box, and it's like you almost can't swallow past it, and it's like this heavy drip that could be like minutes before the real water works, right? So I had that rock the whole fucking time, you know, and I just, it was beautiful. It was amazing, and I'm so grateful that I could be there. And I'm so grateful that they are together. And I'm so grateful that we live in a world where people decide to do things like this, you know? Maybe monogamy isn't for everybody. I think there's a lot of evidence showing that different altered systems of relationships, such as asexuality or polyamory or even multiple whatevers or just open relationships or serial monogamy. I think that the world of sexuality is a very broad cup that you can dip into, you know? But I can tell you that within the system, this system, which is a system within systems, which is equally valid to any other, man, I got faith in these two. And I think there's a good chance that they could do this for the rest of their lives and be happy doing it. And I don't think they're going to get bored. And seeing that is really cool. The situation, this event, this time for me was like hitting emotional heroin for 4 or 5 days straight. And I got to soak up in a sea of non-decision making. I made very little decisions for us. We just kind of went with the wind, you know? First day we got in, my buddy was fucking half dead, so he went to sleep, and then I got to the Airbnb that we were sharing with about 5 or 6 guys. And my friend, he had a family member pass, and so we decided to accompany him down to Tucson, Arizona, to go see the space of Tucson, which is where his family's from, and yada, 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 yada. But we got to go to this spectacular cathedral called St. Xavier's Cathedral, and it's like three stories, stark white paint, and inside it was a Catholic church cathedral, but inside was just beautiful paintings, just old paintings. This is from like the mid 1700s, I believe. And yeah, just so beautiful. And the cactuses everywhere, you know. So yeah. And then the heat, which was something that I've always heard. Arizona's incredibly hot, yet I didn't complain too much. I got my first sunburn yesterday evening while we were at that lake. But yeah, even in that sun, even with all the activity, I am remarkably unscathed, and my son, the little bit of burn that I got, should probably be gone. And the last thing I want to talk about this event, which I'm kind of hopping around just because I'm looking at the time, but Odin did amazing. He did so good at the, he did so good at the wedding. I'm very proud of him. A lot of people were very worried because he is a very high-strung individual, but he was doing pretty good. He was even like getting food for old ladies and getting drinks, and he somehow made money. I think he was trying to work, but he even bought himself a soda somehow. And it's funny when you're in these ceremonial rituals. You know, you have these huge crowds of people, but the group mind is very safe. And the kids, there was lots of kids, and I wasn't worried, you know. And because both the bride and groom are very close to me and two of my best friends, I knew most of their family. So not too many people were strangers. And the strangers that I did encounter, it was a very exciting experience to meet these people that I'd only heard about. We felt very comfortable. Odin felt very comfortable. He really liked the water. Right before we got on the plane, we went to the pool at my buddy's complex. and the bride's grandfather and her dad were throwing Odin around and playing with him and doing water fights. And she comes over to me and she goes, you know, he's got two more grandpas now. And I was like, this, you're so right, you know. But it was good for him. And coming back home and the return process of a vacation, because like I feel like high almost, and it's not chemical, but just being out there and coming home, it's a little nerve-wracking, and I'm sensitive right now, and I'm trying to be very careful. And Odin's very sensitive because it's just me and him, and we're alone, and we've been surrounded by people for the last week, and he's tired, and we're on a different schedule and systems, and everything was so different and good and bad and all of the intricacies that the world is. And right now we're returning, and I think everybody should be very mindful about when we return from any altered state, whether it's chemical or an activity, or if it's emotional heroin like a wedding. But when we're coming back, be sensitive with yourself and be patient with those around you, especially the small ones and the young ones. I made a severe mistake right before I recorded this. We just got home. He's been watching TV a lot today. He's probably got about 2 or 3 hours. So I wanted to break it up. So I broke up one bit. We went to the store. We got in a fight on the way to the store. But the fight came because I was sensitive and he wasn't respecting me, quote unquote, with sarcasm, lots of sarcasm. And so my way was to get mad and angry, which is dumb because it's totally counter against everything that I've been practicing in my parenting style. Because when you get mad and angry, you relinquish control and you give them what they want, and you also fuck them up, you know? It's all fucked up. So got to the store, got through it. My dad showed up somehow, which is cool. So he calmed Odin down. We got through it. He got really hungry, got him some sushi, got home. He watched more TV. And so the second break from the TV, which is a crunch point, because it's a non-preferred activity. You know, I was like, hey man, need you off the TV. But I just got done reading a parenting book and I was all talking about how kids should have their own responsibility. So instead of going slowly into teaching him responsibility, I was like, hey man, go clean your room. Oh, can I get some help? No, is what I told him. Flat no, hard no. And I was like, you got to go do it yourself. And of course that's hard because he's tired and he hasn't cleaned his room a lot alone. And then I give him extra time frames, and then I hinged TV on it, which is heavy. And so, you know, he just fucking broke down. And was I teaching responsibility, or is I just exercising control to make myself feel comfortable? You know, anyway, there's my shitty parenting moment for the day. We all have them. I'm gonna turn this around. You know, you could turn your shitty parenting moments around too, but I want to show you that you can be vulnerable and you can talk about these things. Do not hide your mistakes. Work through them, make it better. He's sleeping right now. From this point on, I'm still not going to let him have TV until his room is clean. I'm going to set that because I've already made that. However, I'm going to slack back on making him do it alone. Even if it takes a while, I can sit with him and make him feel more comfortable. I'm not going to do it for him, and I'm going to be very stern and make sure that he does more effort than he usually does, because I've done it for him most of his life. I've cleaned his room for him. I've always helped him with it, and I get impatient, so then I rush it. So he knows that he doesn't actually have to focus on it. I've reinforced all these situations to where they are. So now I need to step back a little bit. And when he wakes up, there's still going to be a line in the sand, but all the controls, and especially my anger, whew, we're going to cut that real quick. Anger and an emotional outburst is giving away our parent license, at least in my opinion. Either way, we're okay. He's okay. I love him, and he loves me. And that's what parenting and the parent-child relationship is all about. And all of the difficulties and the fights that are in it too. So be patient with yourself. Before I go on to O, I'm going to do chapter 23 from my Ursula Le Guin Tao Te Ching, which is a really good translation. She's a fiction writer who does tremendous work, and her compilation here is one of my favorites. So this is 23, and this is Lao Tzu via Ursula telling me how I could parent a little better. Nature doesn't make long speeches. A whirlwind doesn't last all morning. A cloudburst doesn't last all day. Who makes the wind and rain? Heaven and earth do. If heaven and earth don't go on and on, certainly people don't need to. The people who work with Tao are Tao people. They belong to the way. People who work with power belong to power. People who work with loss belong to what's lost. Give yourself to the way, and you'll be at home on the way. Give yourself to power, and you'll be at home in power. Give yourself to loss, and when you're lost, you'll be at home. To give no trust is to get no trust. So, I read this commentary on some other Taoist text at some indeterminate time. It's just creeping up from my subconscious now. But this person is basically saying that there's a lot of uncomfortable, awkward moments in our day when we're walking around. We don't know exactly what we're supposed to do. And we're just like, fuck. You know that anxiety. I think it's a human part of every day. And it might be really short spigots. You might have a second of it. Like, I used to just gap out when I was a kid, and I'd look at a wall, and like my pupils would, like my eyes would cross, and I'd just like look through the wall, and there would just be like this whoo spook. And like, you know, it happens a lot in psychedelics. The spook's always there, you know. But, or imagine this. Have you ever, especially when you were a kid, when you went to a sleepover and you woke up on their floor or on their couch, and you look around, and at first you have no idea where you are, what you are, who you are, what you're doing. That delirium, that awkwardness, that's before judgment. That's before sensation. You know, it's very connected to non-sleeping, non-dreaming sleep, deep sleep, at least in my opinion. Within that murkiness is where creation and where all of our judgments and ideas come from. So that's where we build the way. We find the way where it's unwalkable, where it's unseeable. And I know that makes absolutely no fucking sense. All right, anyways, thank you so much for being here. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Also, before I get off, I toasted at the speech. I was the third person to toast. I did it quickly so I didn't overthink myself. And I said not a lot of words. It was short and it was sweet and it wasn't all about me. And I think I did a good job. And my brother and my sister loved it. And I think I did good work because that's my art. This is my art. The way that I put words together is my spirit. And this is what I'm doing for the world. And I was able to give it at a ceremony. And I'm still trying to do it here. This is me channeling my idea of what is. Because there's not a word for it. And thank you. Thank you for being here. And thank you for giving me your moment. Thank you for giving me your ears. I appreciate you. You're a lovely being. You're a lovely spirit. I'm so grateful that you woke up this morning and that you're breathing. And I can't wait to see you next week. Let's go see how Odin's doing.
Hello, people. This is me and the gingerbread man in Asco.
Oh, that was very energetic, my son.
Yep.
Very, very energetic. Well, how are you doing today?
Good.
Yeah? How did you like that trip we just went on?
Good.
Tell me a story.
Last week's trip was pretty good.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something, people?
Yep.
So, the trip was pretty good. We went to Las Vegas.
We did not go to Las Vegas.
Yes, we did.
We went to Arizona.
No, we went to Las Vegas. Don't lie, Daddy.
I'm not lying.
Yes, you are.
Okay. Well, we did not go to Las Vegas. But continue your story, child.
Yes, okay. Well, we go to Las Vegas. It was really hot.
Really? It was very hot?
Yes. What else? Las Vegas was really hot today. Okay, we just got back home from the airplane.
Yeah.
Also,
what did you think of the airplane?
I think it was good.
Yeah. What was your favorite part about the airplane?
My favorite part, I get to sit in a high chair.
Oh, geez. A big chair?
No, a high chair.
A real chair? He didn't have to have a booster seat or anything. All right. You want to say bye to everybody?
Bye, people.
Thank you.
From the big gingerbread man in the show.
Thank you. Bye.